Welcome to the Entrepreneur Podcast. If you're growing a brand around your nerdy passion, you can learn from business and marketing podcasts, or you can learn from nerds like you. This is the show built by bloggers, cosplayers, gamers, artists, and other entrepreneurs that are making the things you love. How's it going, entrepreneurs? Welcome to episode 55 of the Entrepreneur Podcast by Under the Capes. I am Tim Ludi, aka Under the Capes. I have a great episode for you today. I talk with James Intricasso, who is a podcaster, game designer, and blogger in the Dungeons & Dragons community. He and his partner, Rudy Basso, started the Don't Split the Podcast Network, which is an amazing podcast network for Dungeons & Dragons and tabletop RPG podcasts. Among those, one of the shows is Tabletop Babble, which is hosted by James and talks to a lot of the people in the RPG community, a lot of people from Dungeons & Dragons and other role-playing games about specific topics in that community. A lot of great fun and information there. He also hosts, or Dungeon Masters, the Demon Plague podcast, which is an actual play RPG podcast that runs through a campaign from level 1 to 20. And in addition to that, he is a game designer for RPG games. He has a lot of independent titles available on the DMs Guild. I actually got to play one of his Adventurer League games last weekend. I got to run that with a few friends, and that was a lot of fun. Fester and Burn was the name of the adventure. He is also a designer for some of the past Wizards of the Coast adventures, like Waterdeep Dragon Heist and the upcoming Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus, which looks awesome. In addition, he blogs a lot about the Dungeons & Dragons and the game design process, and a lot of that goes into it at World Builder Blog. And we talk about all of this and a lot more in the interview. This is a great one for anyone interested in podcasting and game design and Dungeons & Dragons and anything, starting a live play game, anything in that realm. We cover a lot of information, and James, this was a lot of fun, and I think you guys are going to get a lot out of it, so let's dive right on in. All right, I'm now joined by James Intricasso. James, thanks for joining me.
Hey, it is awesome to be here, Tim. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you tell me a little bit about how you got started playing D&D and how that became this brand of yours?
Yeah, definitely. I have a very typical sort of D&D story, right? I have an older brother, and he and his friends were playing in the basement, and I used to watch and listen to them. I remember being a little kid. I was probably about, 9 years old, and being in our parents' basement as my brother was playing with his friends. And around the time, they had brought it to my brother, right? And he was learning how to play it, and it just blowing my mind as a kid that this was possible as a game, that there was a game like this where you were telling stories and the goal wasn't to be competitive, right? The goal was to tell this awesome story together, and you were heroes, and it was just, you could do whatever you wanted, right? Like, it was the ultimate video game experience. And when I was 8, video games weren't that awesome. They didn't have these open worlds and stuff. And even now, right, you can still do things in RPGs that you can't get in a video game experience, as robust as they are. And so this whole thing blew my mind. I hated board games because I was kind of a sore loser as a kid, and I had many friends who were sore losers, so it never really turned out well, always ended in tears and that kind of thing. And it just really captured my imagination from the get-go. And eventually one of the people went home and they needed someone to play that character, because that character was the cleric. And so I, after hours of sitting around and listening to them and asking to play, I was finally able to play. And the next time they played, a bunch of people left early and I had some of my friends over and we all played together. And one of those kids went back and told his dad, like, oh, we did this cool thing. And his dad had played in college. And so his dad was able to give us old role playing game stuff. And from there, you know, I just really have never stopped playing. And it was probably around the time that I was like 28, right? So I was playing a lot. I was introducing people in college and high school to it and that sort of thing. And it was just probably, I was a big fan, big hobby fan. And I'd always thought like, oh, it would be cool to do something more with this. And I was living with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and I had a lot of free time and I wasn't really doing anything constructive, right? I was doing a lot of vegging out and that sort of thing. And I was kept saying that I didn't want to just sit in front of the TV, right? I needed something constructive to do, but I wasn't sure what. And, you know, I am a creative person professionally. I always have been. So I was in television and film, and I still do television and film stuff freelance. But I was doing stuff like that, and I would always talk about this idea I had for a D&D news podcast. And it was in the middle of the 5th edition playtest, and I was trying to consume everything I could podcast-wise about it, and there just wasn't enough. And I wanted to know more, and I wanted to hear people discuss more and that sort of thing. I kept talking about that, and I kept saying I didn't want to just be lazy. And she said to me, like, well, why don't you give this podcast thing a try? Why don't you go ahead and do that? So I did, and I was looking for advice. I knew how to edit, I knew how to record, but I wanted sort of advice about how do you make a podcast engaging? What do you do? So I reached out to Jeff Greiner, who is the creator and host of the Tome Show podcast, which is the longest running unofficial D&D podcast there is. It's been it's well over a decade old. They might actually be over 15 years old now. But I had approached him and I said, this is my idea for a show. What do you think? And he said, that sounds great. Do you want to come do it on our feed? Which was very kind of him. I was a stranger. I didn't know him at all. And at the time, because people were so hungry for D&D news, you know, he was getting a lot of downloads, upwards of 3,000 every week. And so I created this show that turned into a monthly or a weekly show called The Roundtable. And it was talking about D&D news. And it started with a lot of news centered around the playtest and then, you know, the release of 5th edition and that sort of thing. And that ran for 3 years. And during that time, I said, you know, I have this great platform. This is a great opportunity. What else have I always wanted to do? And the answer was design, right? I always wanted to write D&D books and products and role-playing game products and things like that. I wasn't just a D&D guy. I played a lot of other role-playing games. I still do. And so I started a blog, World Builder Blog, and on the podcast, I started to point people towards that blog, right? Because I was like, I already have this built-in audience that Jeff has given to me so kindly. What else can I get them to? And so the blog started to grow, and it was about this homebrew world I was building, and eventually became like a general GM advice game design blog that is also a blog about me and the things I'm doing and that sort of thing. And so that was how all of that came to fruition. And from there, because I started to post my design work on the blog, I started to get offers to work with people. You know, I started to work with the Adventurers League. I started to work with Roll20. And both of those companies initially rejected me, right? So I started to work with the Adventurers League. I had applied. They had like a writing test right when I had started the blog that I tried out for. And, you know, I didn't make it. And that's okay. They had a lot of people who were like, you know, applying to be writers for the Adventurers League. But the blog was a way for me to keep practicing my writing, keep putting it out there in the world. And it was good because I knew that the blog would only grow if I was consistent, right? And so I had this consistent schedule, and it forced me to write, which forced me to practice, which forced me to get better. And eventually the Adventurers League said, hey, your stuff has gotten, you know, up to our standard. Why don't you come write for us? Same thing with Roll20. I applied to be their game master when they had a game master position, and it was like, I made it to the final round, and I didn't get the gig, which, again, totally fine, went to Adam Kobol, who is an incredible game master, and I would pick him over me any day of the week. But it allowed me to meet a bunch of people in Roll20, and then they asked me to do design work for them. They asked me to occasionally do some shows and things like that. And through that, because I had applied for that opportunity and because I, you know, remained gracious and friendly with the people throughout, I ended up running a game at Roll20Con, which is a virtual convention for Chris Perkins, and which is a little like giving mass to the Pope. You know, it's a little scary in that way, but essentially I ran this game for Chris Perkins, and Chris Perkins took note, and eventually through all of these different things was able to then work on Waterdeep Dragon Heist, which was the first hardcover book that I worked on. And at the same time, I eventually left the Tome Show and started Don't Split the Podcast Network with my business partner, Rudy Basso. And so now we have a podcast network. We took all the lessons we learned from the Tome Show. We still love Jeff. We're still super grateful to Jeff. I still listen to the Tome Show. It's one of the best podcasts out there. We're going in a different direction. And now we have this podcast. I have my podcast, Tabletop Babble. And then there's a bunch of other shows on the network. The Demon Plague is an actual play podcast that I am the dungeon master for. And then we've got a bunch of other people, Dames and Dragons and Venture Maidens and Redemption, which is a Star Wars actual play, have joined us. And that is sort of how, that is the long version of how it all got started.
Yeah. And I love the path you took, you know, working with someone else who was experienced, lending your own voice to that and building your audience that way, building your audience through the World Builder blog, and like slowly, like thing by thing, building it up and meeting new people and then kind of branching out on your own seems like a great way to do it.
Yeah. And again, I was very lucky to have the support of people like Jeff, and Mike Shea of Sly Flourish was super supportive during that time and helped share my stuff and was willing to, you know, chat with me, give me tips and all that kind of stuff. So I had a lot of support from some really great established people, and, you know, try to give that support in the same way to other members of the community, try to pay that forward as well, which I think has served me, because then, as you know, as other people I have become friends with, you know, you become friends with by meeting people and doing this thing, as they, you know, gain their sort of popularity and they build their brands in the community, I'm able to then work with them, right? It's a rising tide lifts all ships, definitely, here in the RPG community.
Yeah, and I like, you know, it's the building connections, and it's also, like you said, learning stuff. Like, I always, in prepping for these interviews, I'll always go back and listen to the very first episode of a podcast to see, like, you know, oh, look how far you've come. Like, and most of them, you know, poor audio quality, you know, they're not quite finding their footing. I mean, it wasn't your first podcast ever, but the first Tabletop Babble, it was Mike Merle's, the audio was high quality, the production value, because you'd learned over years, and when you released Tabletop Babble, you were ready.
Yeah, exactly, right? I had 3 years of experience. I had, you know, over 100 episodes of podcasting, writing, producing, editing under my belt. And I still, even now, you know, we're in the third year now of Tabletop Babble. I'm still learning things. I'm still upgrading equipment. I'm still improving sound quality. So there's always more to learn too, which is great. But yeah, it certainly helps to be able to say, oh, okay, you know, if you went back and listened to the first episode of the Roundtable, you would hear, you know, the typical audio fuzz that you hear on a lot of first podcasts. You would hear how nervous we all are to be doing the show and that sort of thing. And it's definitely come a long way. Practice makes perfect. And, you know, I'm still practicing, I guess, is the way to think of it.
Yeah, and it's great that with the Don't Split the Podcast Network, you've been able to help new people through that process of getting a first show up, or help promote new people as they're kind of just coming up. What advice do you bring to new people, or what did you have to draw on yourself when you first started your show that you're able to share?
Yeah, I think one thing is, you know, if you keep thinking about it, doing it, right, is a good thing. Like, you become a writer by writing, you become a podcaster by podcasting, you become a member of the community by participating in the community. And so it's hard. You have to make yourself do those things. And the reason I liked being able to do these things in public was I had a reason to be held accountable, right? The blog holds me accountable because I know there are people who are going to check every Thursday to see what the new blog post is. The podcast holds me accountable because I know there are people every Monday who are going to check for stuff. So giving yourself deadlines is good, because I do think that perfect is the enemy of done, right? And it's better to put something out there in the world, invite the community to comment on it, ask them what they think and that sort of thing, and then take that feedback, you know, think about that feedback and what does it mean and that sort of stuff. And, you know, be ready, because the RPG community is a people who are ready to scrutinize things like rules and writing and all that sort of stuff. And so some people will have very constructive feedback. Some people will tear your stuff apart. And, you know, like any place online, they're always jerks. So be ready to ignore those people too. But just that would be the biggest thing, is to give yourself the deadlines so that you get it done, right? Like, that's if you're interested in doing it, starting it is really the biggest thing. And then putting it out there for people to consume is big, because there are a lot of people who are willing to help and be cheerleaders and that sort of thing for new people in the community, because they know what it is like to be that person who is coming up. So the biggest thing is to do it, to really do it, and then to really be active in the community.
Yeah, like the Jerry Seinfeld's Don't Break the Chain, like, where you just write every day. Like, once you get started and then you get that momentum going and get people counting on you, that's powerful.
Yeah, it's like working out too, right? Like, you know, if you want to work out, you have to make it a habit. And when you make it a habit, it makes those muscles that you are working stronger. Writing, podcasting, all of those things are mental muscles. And so, you know, you need to make them stronger. And it's one of those things where I see people sometimes online say, like, oh, I would really love to do X, Y, or Z, but I'll never be asked. And it's like, well, you never put anything out there into the world. You know, maybe you are a brilliant writer and maybe you've been writing for a long time, but if you haven't shared, if you've never posted something or published something, then we don't know. So you have to get it out there too, for sure.
And I saw the World Builder blog has had an episode or a blog a week since 2014.
Yeah, and when it started, actually, it was two a week. So I used to be every Tuesday and Thursday, and now it's been every Thursday. And sometimes they're very short, and, you know, if I'm going to a convention or that sort of thing, as I have done more and more writing for other people, paid writing work and that sort of thing, I have the number of articles on the blog has slowed down a bit, but I still want to be consistent with the content. And I still, you know, I have a Patreon and I still want those people to, you know, have something good that they're supporting in addition to the podcast. And so, you know, there's game design advice on there that still comes out. And I do think it's funny, the stuff that came out at the beginning, I think, even though there was more of it, I don't think it's as good, right? Because it's, like you said, it's 5 years later. And so I have 5 years of practice now, and that sort of thing is better. So even though there's less content, I'm getting more hits on the blog than I was, because the quality of stuff has improved. You know, and sometimes, like a lot of times, I will put something out that is sort of still in playtest format to get the feedback from the community and that kind of thing. And sometimes I'll put out things that spark controversy. Controversy is, of course, in quotes, because I'm not putting out anything like salacious, but things like I'm not a big box text person. I don't like it when I am designing an adventure. I don't like it when I'm running an adventure. And so I propose sort of this alternative, and that is probably my most popular blog post ever. And it is from, you know, 2 months ago. So so it's that kind of thing, tapping into to that. And the other thing that's great about the blog is it's still a space for me. I can put whatever I want there. I can design whatever I want there. And so it's a great way to test some things out, especially if you're working with somebody and they say, oh, this will never fly, or no one will ever like this. You can, you know, grumble to yourself, well, I'll show you, and put it out there, and then see that, oh, they were right. No one actually does want this.
Yeah. And I saw the box text debate really blew up on Twitter and everything, where it's people are decidedly one way or the other.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, I to be clear about that, I don't think we should just throw away box text, which is this read aloud text in adventures that, you know, when you're that for the GM to read out loud. I don't think we should do away with it with nothing to replace it. I think that we can just do, you know, I think we can break it up better. I think we can provide read aloud text in a different format, basically, was sort of what I was proposing. So, but I do think apparently it's a heated issue, and it has been since the beginning of box text, or so I've been told.
But yeah, like you said, the blog seems to be a great way for you to test out ideas and test out content. It seems like that's been the best tool for creating adventures and supplements and new monsters and all these kind of different things that you put out.
Yeah, it really has been. And it's been things, you know, things have guided me in the blog that then, you know, might show up later on in the DMs Guild or that kind of thing. One of my first DMs Guild products. So that was another thing that helped, right? Is I had all of this content, the DMs Guild launched, and I was able to start putting things, taking things from the blog that had been designed, that I had gotten feedback from the community on, and start putting them in to the DMs Guild. And they are not laid out in a beautiful fashion. They are, you know, basically Word documents that I turned into PDFs and that sort of thing. They would not stand well on the DMs Guild today, with all of the other products that are on there. But because there was nothing on the DMs Guild yet, it was, you know, to be able to say, here is a PDF with 50 magic items in it, you know, the second week that DMs Guild was in existence, that was huge. And so that was really helpful then in getting me established as a creator. And then eventually I was able to learn how to, you know, do a proper layout, find proper art and that sort of thing. So later products are better. Also because I've teamed up with people who know how to do those things and made connections through DMs Guild communities and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I feel like a lot of DMs are content creators and are telling these stories that they could potentially turn into products on the DMs Guild, but they're a far away from, you know, figuring out the design aspects of it, figuring out the, like, getting the writing really high quality. Like, what was the learning process there, and what do you do now to make them, like, really publishable adventures?
So one thing that has really helped me, and again, this is, you know, part luck, right, and part not being afraid to put yourself out there, is, like I said, I applied for that job at Roll20, didn't get it, but I did become friendly with the people at Roll20, and I think they must have been impressed by something. I made it through, you know, a couple rounds of interviews, and what was great about it was they asked me if I wanted to be part of the team that broke apart the fifth edition books and put them into Roll20, right? So essentially you get the InDesign files for Roll20, you get the InDesign files from the core rule books, and then you take those, turn them apart, tear them apart with all the art and everything, and put them into Roll20. And while I was doing that, and while I was also writing my own stuff on the blog, I was really picking apart the Wizards of the Coast style, right? I was trying to figure out, like, okay, so what are the you know, how are things consistent? How do they say this? What is the phrasing for when they want you to make a, what we would typically call, right, in casual D&D terms, a skill check? They actually call it an ability check, right? The word skill check never makes an appearance in any D&D book. So it's learning that sort of thing was good to do as I was tearing the books apart and putting them back together. And as I was writing stuff on my blog, I always had a core rule book open and was checking to see, did I do this correctly? Did I do that? So that was a big part of a big learning experience that then helped me when I went to go work for Wizards of the Coast was paying attention to style and format. And then having the practice of writing that stuff is really big. So people should definitely read for the games that they want to design for. They should pour over those books and do a similar thing, right? Take them apart, write stuff with those guidebooks open, and also play the games, right? You know, because once you have sort of mastered the format, then you can pull it apart. Then you can write it the way you think it should be written and get more creative. But it helps to understand, this is the way this is done. Why is it done this way? Why would this phrasing be used? And that sort of thing. So as far as game design goes, you know, playing, reading the games you want is huge, because that's going to help you figure out how to take your DM notes, which, you know, for me is usually like a couple of bullet points, and then turning it into a full adventure. Also understanding that it takes time. You know, I think I probably write about 500 words an hour now. Which is pretty fast if you are going to be writing role-playing game content. But like starting out, I was maybe 250 words an hour, you know, that kind of thing. It takes a long time to think about, like, okay, how am I going to phrase this? Okay, what are my ideas? That sort of thing. So budget enough time for yourself. And, you know, if you are going to set a deadline, be kind to yourself and give yourself the time for that. Then the other thing is meeting people in the community really, really helps. Making friends who can do stuff and working with those people, saying like, hey, I'm going to do layout, or I am good at, you know, editing. I can edit your projects if you can lay out my stuff, or that kind of thing. Finding all of that is important. Getting people to look at your work who aren't you is great. Playtesting is really great. So don't just write something and put it up on the DMs Guild. Test it, have somebody edit it. And if you can't do layout, talk to somebody about doing layout and work out a deal. If you don't have the budget to pay that person, maybe they're interested in sharing royalties from the DMs Guild with you. So those are all options. Learn sort of what's available to you. Make friends in the community who can help you with stuff and teach you how to do things. And then also be willing to learn the systems that you are playing with.
Yeah, I love that, because I'm sure there are very few people on there who are able to do, you know, the layout, the design, the art, the writing.
Yeah, definitely.
And then let you get to the playtesting. It's going to be a collaborative effort no matter what, so.
Exactly. Yeah, there's two people I can think of. They're both DMs Guild adepts, and I'm sure there are many, many others out there, but Rich Lescaflair is a great human who is a good game designer. He's a good artist. He's great at layout. He can edit, and it drives me bonkers because he is so, so good, and I will never have those skills, and he's just getting better every day. And Will Doyle is the same way. So unless you are someone who is multi-talented that way, like a Cecil Howe or whoever, you know, be willing to work with people, be willing to, and treat them fairly, share what you have, and then they will share with you when it comes time, when they need your skill set.
And yeah, I think that you benefited definitely from being there at the early ages of the DMs Guild. Any tips for promoting a new product, either put out there or on any other independent site?
Yeah. So a couple of different things. First is, when you know your product is going to drop, I would, if you're going to contact podcasters and streamers and things like that, absolutely do it. Absolutely. Don't be afraid to reach out and say, hey, can I come plug my thing? You know, I love your show. I want to talk about this or I want to talk about that. But give them time, right? Don't say like, well, my Kickstarter's ending next week, and so I really need your help with that. Let them know before your Kickstarter launches, in the case of Kickstarters. Let them know before your release date, if you want to promote this thing around your release date and that sort of thing. To a sort of smaller thing is, don't be afraid to go online and post in forums, post in on Twitter, you know, and post on Facebook and things like that. Check forum rules, check group rules to make sure you are posting in the right places and respect places that don't want you to do that. But go ahead and do that on Twitter. Put yourself out there several times. Don't just tweet it once and hope that it, you know, goes viral and that sort of thing. Tweet it out. Ask your friends to retweet it and that sort of thing. And know that it takes time, right? You may not, if the first thing you release is this, you know, amazing, gorgeous adventure and not enough people are picking it up, know that as you build your reputation with other products, people will also come back to that. They will say, what else does this person have? And see that kind of thing. But also starting small helps with that then. Start with something that's manageable that you know you can get done, that because it will take more time than you think. And then promote that, right? People are far more likely to pick up a collection of magic items than they are a full campaign setting, right? Because the magic items can be dropped into any game. The full campaign setting, you need to sort of stop what you're doing, readjust, it's more expensive, all that kind of stuff stops people. So you're more likely to get well known with smaller products that are less expensive. Give away a taste for free. People love free content, and free content can be shared and that sort of thing. So, you know, saying like, hey, I've got this book of magic items, I'm giving away one of them for free, here it is, here's the art with it, here's the whole entry, that is always a great thing to do as well. And also then getting involved in products that have more people on them. So like there's two DMs Guild groups on Facebook, the DMs Guild Creator Circle and the DMs Guild Fan Club. And if you get involved in those groups, you will see all the time people asking for, hey, like we're going to make a mega dungeon together, or we're going to make a book of magic items or a book of monsters or whatever it is. Come hop on board. That's a great way to get known and to get your stuff out there, because you'll be attached to, you know, 5, 10, 20 other people. Uncaged Anthology, which just came out, was created by Ashley Warren, is this huge book of adventures and new takes on what are typically sort of female-coded monsters, and it's an awesome book, and there's so many great artists, designers, editors, map makers who have worked on this thing, and I guarantee that a lot of them are getting work because they got to work with other people on that product, because other people saw their work, and it's, you know, helping boost their sales of other things. So that's sort of what we're looking at here. Don't be afraid to promote yourself too. A lot of people, I think, get into the like, it feels weird, especially, you know, in America where like humble is a good thing, right? And so you're not supposed to be in people's face about your product. Don't worry about that. Online, be all about you. Be your biggest cheerleader. Share your stuff. If you love your stuff and are excited about it, other people will be too.
Yeah, and I think it works both ways. When you're saying like getting involved with these anthologies or these collections of work, where if you're putting out stuff and learning from it, and then when you have those opportunities, you now have that body of work to show them. Like I've seen those calls for contributions, and if you don't have that back catalog of work to show them that you can contribute, then you can't really get involved with those.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true. It really, I remember when there was an open Dungeons & Dragons designer position that somebody was just hired for a couple months ago, a guy named Dan Dillon, amazing designer. Mike Merles was saying, I have so many great resumes, but from people who have not published anything, please just put something out there so I have something to read, right? So, you know, that's, it's very true that it helps getting jobs, big and small, to put stuff out there.
Yeah, and I also loved that you mentioned, like, Twitter. Twitter is good, but it's really finding the forums that people are on, going on the podcasts that other people, like, your audience listens to, and really finding where your audience is and promoting them there.
Yeah, yeah, totally. You know, that is a very, very big part of it, so that's important.
Awesome. And then, yeah, the other thing that we haven't really touched on is your so in the Don't Split the Podcast network of the many shows, you also have the Demon Plague.
Yes. Yeah. Demon Plague is so the Demon Plague is an actual play podcast that is born of the Kickstarter for an adventure of the same name, the Demon Plague, that is a level 1 through 20 fifth edition adventure that can be dropped anywhere. And I wrote it with John Four, and John Four runs this great website called Role Playing Game Tips. It's been around for years. He is super amazing and incredible and knows a ton about business too. And essentially, he came to me and said, I want to make an adventure that helps teach people how to GM. And so I wrote this adventure with him. It's 372 pages. It did great on Kickstarter. And one of our stretch goals was running an actual play podcast of the adventure. So that is, we're coming actually down to the end. So the Demon Plague podcast, is our Twitch show, turned into an audio only version with tons of sound effects added and things like that. Rudy Basso, who is my, I mentioned him before, podcast partner. He's also one of the players on the show. He's also the editor of the show, does a ton for that. And so running an actual play podcast is a totally different experience from running an interview podcast. The first and most obvious difference is it takes a lot more editing. You know, typically for an interview podcast, something like this that we're doing now, one-on-one, I find it takes about, editing takes about like double as long as the interview is, right? If you want to cut out some weird, awkward moments, sneezes, whatever, that sort of thing. Ohs and ums, sometimes people like to cut out. It can take that or longer. If you're doing something like an actual play podcast, it's going to take a lot of time because you've got more people involved, you've got action involved, you've got way more dead moments where people are doing things like looking up rules or that sort of thing. In our case, because it starts as a Twitch version, we cut out a lot of the Twitch stuff where we're responding to people in chat or that kind of thing. So give yourself a lot of time there. The other thing about actual plays are there's a lot of them. There are a lot of actual play podcasts now. There's a lot of actual play streaming shows. There's a lot of actual play shows on YouTube. And so finding what makes your show different, I think, is helpful. You know, Venture Maidens and Dames and Dragons are extremely popular. They're the most popular shows on the Don't Split the Podcast Network. And I think part of it is because they are wonderful storytellers and great role players. And part of it is they all have a hook that makes them interesting, right? And they all do a lot of work in their post-production. So, you know, finding something like that gives you a reason for this is different, right? And my hope for the Demon Plague is that the Demon Plague is different because it is can be dropped anywhere and is based on this actual play campaign that is the first of its kind that many people bought, right? A lot of people are still buying it on DriveThruRPG and that sort of thing. So this is a way to, hey, here's one version of this campaign that people have run and that sort of thing that people can check out. And it's available on podcast, on YouTube, on stream, so you can watch and engage with the show however you want.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of kind of how your whole brand works, where it's the adventure module feeding into the podcast, feeding into Twitch, feeding back into, you know, everything is helping to promote everything else, which I think it really supports you well.
Yeah, definitely. And I do have sort of my own marketing platform that I've built, right? And so that is a big help to have the podcast and say, oh, I can talk about this thing that I have created now, and I can point people over here to it. And similarly, on the blog, I'm able to then, you know, point people to stuff that I have done and that kind of thing. So it all definitely, you know, everything you do feeds into everything else you have done. And if you can thread it together even more closely, that's really good, right? That's a good thing to say, okay, these things are here and these things are here. And a lot of what you do will be evergreen. You know, a lot of products I make are, they're going to be good for as long as people are still playing 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, or, you know, something else if it's a product I've made for another role-playing game. So, you know, that is a big, big part of it.
Yeah. So, what are your future plans for all these different things? Both, you know, do you have anything coming out soon? And then, you know, a year, 5 years down the line, what are you planning?
So that is a great question. One thing for me is I've sort of flown by the seat of my pants since the beginning of this. I definitely at the beginning didn't think it would turn into this. I was never really like gunning to write on a D&D book. It was always a dream I had, but I wasn't sure, like, I didn't approach Chris Perkins and say like, hey, let me write, you know, which is not to say that that's not a, you know, that might be a great way for somebody to get to write for them. All that is to say is, as far as plans go, I don't know that I have a great clear plan, but I do have things that I think would be great if they happened. And I sort of work towards those. So I don't have a solid plan for this, but I would love to, one thing I can say that I know is coming out that has been announced is, Roll 20 is going to put out an original role-playing game soon, and that original role-playing game is called Burn Bright, and I'm one of the lead designers on it, along with Jim McClure, Kat Kuhl, and Darcy Ross, and it is a system that is optimized for Roll 20. So you could play it at the table without Roll 20, but it works best on Roll 20, and so that is something that is coming that I'm really interested to see. Because I love all role-playing games. I love sci-fi. This is sort of a science fantasy role-playing game. So it falls into that spacey genre, which is great. And I love virtual tables because for years I wasn't near anybody who could play and I wasn't near any friends who could play. And they really saved my game and allowed me to play. Roll20 is my virtual tabletop of choice, but they're all great. And so I'm excited to see, you know, how this does. Are people interested in this kind of thing? How does it work? So there might be more coming on that front if that is really successful. And then another thing I would love to do is I want to figure out ways to pay people better in the role-playing game space. I want to try to be a leader there and think about, you know, a company that can create great role-playing game products that gives people really good wages and, doesn't make people have to work a bunch of hours who are designers or artists or that kind of thing in this field to support themselves, because role-playing games doesn't pay great in the scheme of like writing and things like that, even for writing and artists and that sort of thing, which, you know, across various industries are paid well or not depending on how corporate you get and that sort of thing. Role-playing games are at the very bottom. I think like only being a poet kind of pays less per word. So it is one of those things where I want to, because I'm a designer, I want to figure out how do I break the wheel, to borrow a phrase from Daenerys Targaryen, right? So that's sort of one of the things that I am looking at in the future is how can I make the space better for people who are working in the space so that we can attract the best writers and stuff to come and make our world and products even more awesome.
Yeah, because any of these fields where it's predominantly freelancers is going to be inherently a struggle. So,
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's awesome to hear the Roll20 new game coming out. Yeah, Roll20 has completely changed how my game is run. So,
yeah. It's pretty awesome. So it's a very powerful tool too. You know, I've done some playtests of Burn Bright in person with people, and we have our laptops open, and that has been great too. So I'm excited to see that. And I guess I can say, sort of less far in the future, I worked on The Descent. It's called Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus. It's the new storyline that's coming out from Wizards of the Coast in the fall. So in September, you can pick up that book, and I worked on it along with a team of amazing people and other designers.
Very cool. Yeah, that sounds like an awesome story. And the D&D Live event last weekend that you were involved in seems like that was a really great time.
It was really cool. It was it's a lot like nerd summer camp. Any convention I really go to is like that, right? Like you're in a room and you realize everyone here knows what a dexterity saving throw is. This is a beautiful thing, right? So that's pretty great.
And yeah, this has been great. Do you have one final piece of advice for someone just starting out building a geek brand?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is don't lose sight. Well, I keep saying everything is the biggest thing, right? But really, don't lose sight of what it is you're doing and why you're doing it, right? So one thing for me that I always try to remember is if I am not playing games, because I'm working too hard, right? If I'm missing my D&D sessions because I've become so obsessed with building the brand and that sort of thing, then what is the point? So remember why you love the thing you love, and that will help stop it from becoming something you hate. You won't feel bitter about having to go do these things or that sort of thing. Remember why you love, if it's Star Wars, make sure you're taking the time to watch and consume Star Wars content just for fun, right? Make sure you're playing games just for fun. Make sure you're doing whatever it is that you are doing for you for fun, because that's the great thing about being a geek. We're fans of stuff. We are fanatics about the things that we like, and we want other people to love them too. And so if you lose that love, you're not going to be a great ambassador for your brand, and you will also just be miserable. So why are you doing it anyway? You want to be miserable, go be a banker or something. Not that all bankers are miserable. I'm sure a lot of them love it. But go do something that you love, and don't forget to love it.
Yeah, I love that, because the dream is, obviously to turn something you love into your job, but if you swing too far the other way, you don't want to end up ruining the thing you love, so.
Exactly, yes.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this has been great, James. Where should people go to follow you, learn more about your work, check out some of your modules?
Yeah, so if people want to learn more about who I am and what I do, they can go to worldbuilderblog.com. They can go to don'tsplitthepodcastnetwork.com, and they can head on over to twitter.com/JamesAndTricasso. There's links to pretty much everything I do. You can also search for me on the DMs Guild and DriveThruRPG to see other products that I have done there.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it. This was awesome.
There you have it, guys. My interview with James Intricasso. A lot of great advice in this one. The one thing that I really enjoyed and I think stood out to me was the importance of consistency, of getting started with something and then making sure that you're doing it consistently and that you have that goal for yourself in mind. He's been posting once a week on his blog for the past 5 years. He's been posting consistently with the podcasts. He's been creating consistent content to get better and better, and that's getting him noticed by the right people and opening up new opportunities. And it is really A lot of people's advice is just get started, and then from there, it's the advice really has to be, and then don't stop, because you are going to keep getting better and better, and new opportunities will open up for you, new audiences will find you and look back at your older stuff, and it kind of snowballs from there, and these things take time, so... you know, really staying consistent and putting out a great product, as good a product as you can, week by week or month by month or whatever you have time for, is definitely the key. So, give James a follow. Check out his work on the Don't Split the Podcast Network at don'tsplitthepodcastnetwork.com. You can also read more of his work at worldbuilderblog.me and follow him on Twitter at James Intricasso. I hope you guys got a lot out of this episode. I would love to hear what you thought of it and any other feedback as I try to consistently improve and get better. And any feedback on iTunes or Stitcher in the form of a rating and a review is a huge help to the show. And I look forward to bringing you guys a new episode very soon. Thanks. Thanks so much for listening to the Entrepreneur Podcast by Under the Capes. I hope this episode has helped motivate you to either start or grow your geek brand. If you liked the episode, I would love if you could give us a rating and a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to be listening from. And feel free to connect with us on social media, on Twitter at Under the Capes, on Facebook at Under the Capes, and on Instagram at Under the Capes Cosplay. Thanks so much and have a great day.